Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hubris is coming home to roost here.
She's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, Morak.
What are we about? 500 feet up now?
Psst, psst, psst. Here, kitty, kitty.
Trickleweed! There's trickleweed over there!
I'm very familiar with father wizard figures dismissing me.
I'm Jock! I'm a wizard!
This is not an intimidating building.
Hello! Welcome to the Darling Dungeon!
And you take 8d6 fall damage. No,
Merry Christmas, Joe.
Merry Christmas, Harlan. This week we're on episode 11, The Shape of Things to Come.
That's right. And for this Christmas season, I am happy to announce MVP goes to Brendan Tang.
Woohoo!
From Brendan Gets a Hobby on Instagram for giving us a shout out while painting some minis.
Thanks, Brendan. And thank you so much to everyone for joining us this year and making 2019 so wonderful. Special thanks to our Patreon donors. If you're not one of them, consider supporting us. Just go to www.diceshamepodcast.com for all the details.
I'm ready to see some D&D action. How about you?
Bring it on.
Let's do it.
Guys?
Yeah.
It's episode 11.
Woo!
Yeah.
One.
So exciting. That whole scene, I remember, that was it was like the somber sort of funeral scene.
Yes,
and you were doing your whole thing about the undead. Mm-hmm. Does a hand reach up and like right at the end?
Well, see, I don't know if I actually prevented against that, so we might have an army against it.
But I think an army of the undead.
Yeah.
They'll just be following you through the wilderness for the rest of the game.
Right.
And they're good undead. Wrong.
They're good undead.
Undead that we say, we brought their bodies back home.
Like
there's
Casper.
No way they could be like negative. Casper.
You can use them as pack mules.
Oh, great.
Tireless.
Strong. Can we strap on some
dad? Can we my grave?
Rearrange their bones like Lego.
And most importantly, we leveled up.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go around the table and talk about what we are most excited about for level 4. Let's start with Alex. So Doran is now a level 4 fighter, correct?
Yes, correct.
What are you excited about?
Well, okay. You know what? Instead of taking an ability increase, I've decided to go for a feat.
Ooh.
And I've chosen to take the feat of lucky, which gives me inexplicable luck. I've got 3 luck dice and I can roll an additional d20, which means that I can choose to roll a d20 if I don't like my original roll.
Before you hear the result of the roll,
Before I hear the result of what happens after the roll. Cool. So I can roll and say, I don't like that, and make another roll.
That's a natural one.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Not advantage,
yeah.
Right? We're talking about a separate roll. I can also roll a d20 on an attack. Rolls against me.
Oh, so
if
you
I don't
can,
like that roll, I can roll.
You can essentially impose disadvantage on me.
Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And would you like to increase your hit points by the average, or did you want to roll for hit points?
No, I'm going
to
roll. I've been rolling, Ooh. And it's been really well. So I'm going to roll a d10 and add it to 38.
And 10.
Holy shit.
Wow.
A 10.
This has been working out for me really
well. Attaboy. Yeah.
Nice. So I'm at 51.
Wow.
Incredible. Nice. That's half of 100 plus one.
That's true.
That's correct.
Rob, tell me a little bit about your favorite thing that Jack has to do at level 4.
Yeah, so Jack's level 4 is a little bit straightforward. He's getting smarter. He's going with the plus 2 intelligence, mm-hmm. which is going to help his skills and saves and attacks and everything. He gets some additional spells. I'm going to roll my 1d6 for my hit points. Get a 6.
Whoa! Oh my gosh!
Nice.
And incredible. I get a new cantrip and 2 new second level spells. So I'm thinking Misty Step and Suggestion for the second level spells. Ooh. So I'm going to take Message as my cantrip for this level.
Justin, Kraloth is now a 4th level cleric.
Yes, he is. And yeah, 4th level cleric, he gets to, instead of doing the ability modifier, I'm going to choose a feat which affects my health. So instead of rolling, I decided to go with the average 5 health because I haven't had good luck with these dice. But then also, I'm picking the tough feat, which gives me at this level, I get to double my current level and get that in hit points. I've done the math, and I'm at 43 hit points.
Nice.
Now, with this new feat. And other than that, I get another level 2 spell to cast every day.
Harlan, tell me about Red. What does Red get to do?
I've taken the average hit points, so I'm at 28 hit points. I'm definitely the weakest, but that's okay because it's part of who I am. And rather than taking the ability score increase, I have also taken a feat. We are feet heavy.
What feat are you taking?
My favorite feat, Sharpshooter. So from here on out, attacking at long range does not impose disadvantage for me. Mm. Ranged weapons, weapon attacks, I should say, ignore half and 3/4 cover, which means no matter who is in cover anymore, they are going to take my full damage. And before I make a ranged attack with a weapon, I can choose to take a -5 penalty to the attack roll. And if I do so, it deals an additional 10 damage, which means I can hit very, very hard. And, you know, with these cloud giants on the horizon, I think doing some heavy damage is going to be important.
So I'm not sure if you could all decipher my very heavy, very good dwarven accent. So the Zelbrins are Morok's closest friends, or they were before they were killed by a boulder. And he wanted you to go to Golden Fields to break the news to their son, Miros. He also said there's the matter of Rilix. She's a sweet little thing, but I think she belongs to Miros now. And though I'd love to keep her, it's not right. So morning has broken.
Red literally wakes up on the bar floor where he fell asleep. And like Doran and Morak are like at the bar, like totally fine. And like the bar's already like cleaned up.
It's playing a game of wizard chess.
Yeah, they cleaned around me. Like the floor is swept and I get off the floor and there's like an outline of the dirt of the rubble from last night underneath me.
Morak, tell me about Rilix.
Oh, she's the Tressum that the Zelbrins keep. I think she must be around here somewhere. Can't imagine that she got caught by a boulder. She's too fast for that.
Was she human?
No, she's a Tressum.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Winged cat, you know the type.
Oh, yes, of course.
What? Red jumps up. Hold on. What winged cat are you talking about?
Did you want to go over and look at the place?
Yes.
Let's take a look, shall we?
And Jack, where are you this morning?
I think Jack is in the study in the keep. He's had some inspiration over the night. He's busy scrolling some new things into his spell book. And he's looking at that scroll.
Sure.
And I found there's the rules for adding a spell from somebody else's spell book involve money. The rules for adding a scroll to your spell book are on DMG 200. They involve a roll, but no money.
When a spell is copied from a spell scroll, the copier must succeed on an intelligence check. Arcana.
Yeah.
DC equal to 10 plus the spell's level. I believe that's a 1st level spell.
Yes.
So go ahead and roll.
There's my 12. We're good.
Nicely
I got a 20.
Done. So you successfully copy the spell scroll into your spell book. And as you write all the arcane symbols into your book, they unwrite themselves from the scroll in front of you.
The chromatic orb spell just gets into his spell book and he turns the page and he keeps writing as he's got more ideas for how magic can work together. He's sort of on a roll here.
Cool. So Doran and Red, you head with Morok to the Zelbrin's house.
This isn't one of the houses we looted, was it?
No.
Thank God. As Dorne and I walk through the town, we pass by the tiefling house as they're cleaning things out and shyly look away. And I'm like, those goblins are terrible things.
The Zelbrin cottage is on the southern end of Nightstone. It's actually the one that you were on the roof of, Red, when you were trying to attack the Zhentarim.
I remember this roof.
The roof is greatly damaged by the boulder that has crashed through it 4 days ago now. And there are two corpses underneath this roof. Two elderly humans are lightly decomposing.
The Zelbrins.
I'm sorry for your loss, Morak.
Yes, well, it's not the first people I've lost in war, and I'm sure it won't be the last.
That's right.
So you mentioned that you want us to take their tressum?
Yes, just a minute. Psst, psst, psst. Here, kitty, kitty. Come here. Relics. Psst, psst,
psst. And this beautiful, slinky, Siamese-looking cat with gorgeous wings crawls out of a space in the attic and meow.
What a cute little animal.
Is this a beast, perchance?
It is. It's a tiny beast.
Yeah, I mean, Red's going to walk up to it, and he's going to pass Morak, and I'm going to use my primeval awareness to communicate with it and recognize it as a kindred spirit.
She winds her way around your feet, and you can tell that she's hungry.
And I reach into my pack, and I pull out some lovely rabbit jerky and feed her some.
She scarves it down.
Of course she does. And I pet her, and I pick her up, and I say, she's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, Morak!
Yes, she's really something. I'm very allergic.
Of course we'll bring her to Golden Fields. We can do that. Doran, it shouldn't be too difficult to convince Jack and Kraloth to go to Golden... What is Golden Fields, anyway?
It's a city not far from here, about 4 days' travel.
I think that would be okay. I mean, ultimately we came here to help Jack's friend, but unfortunately she's passed away. Maybe the city will have some work.
Who are we supposed to be talking to in Golden Field?
Miros. Miros Zilbrin, their son. Sorry, I was very drunk last night, and I must have been slurring an awful lot.
We were both slurring.
But I appreciate your willingness to go on this journey for me.
Of course, my friend.
And should we go look for Jack at the keep?
Do say goodbye before you head out of town.
Will do, Morak.
I wouldn't dream of leaving without saying goodbye.
You're a good one.
Thank you.
And we'll head towards the keep, towards Jack. What's Jack doing?
I mean, Jack is still in the library. He's furiously writing in books. He's updating his journal. He's preparing a couple of letters to send.
Drawing rude drawings on top of...
Yeah, scratching his name into the table.
Yeah.
So is the keep empty now? Like, obviously the people who owned it are no longer alive.
Yeah, it's empty.
I think as Doran is heading towards the library...
Did you just mouth loot? Looting?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if Jack in character would be okay with that. So I'm thinking this might be something Red does sneakily. I do want some loot, though. So I'm thinking as we enter the gorgeous keep, Red sort of gets distracted and notices like beautiful, you know, tapestries and stuff. He might just slip off and poke around a little bit to see if there's anything of value. I mean, ultimately, the people who live here are no longer alive and we are going to a city. So, Doran, you can convince Jack. I'll catch up with you in a minute.
Red?
Yeah?
This is the keep of townspeople that now reoccupy the town.
I'm just going to use the bathroom.
Do that. And I'll find Jack.
The giant attack left Nandar Keep in a sorry state, and the occupation by the Zhentarim did nothing to better its situation. The whole main floor is littered in rubble, and you pick your way through up to the staircase that leads to the second floor. You'd been here briefly when you were discussing with Kella and Zolkin about what to do when the orcs approached, but you didn't really get a chance to sieve through the belongings of this keep. You make your way to the master bedroom. Tapestries and oil lamps are mounted to the walls here, and there are some wolfskin rugs that have been rolled up and set to the side. You presume that maybe the Zhentarim had rooted through here a little bit. There are four wardrobes that stand against the walls. There is a four-post bed and a wooden chest at its base. Mounted above the door, there is a longsword.
Oh, wow. Can the longsword be taken? Is it just a weapon?
Potentially.
I recognize in a previous episode you mentioned that armor, when it's used from a body, has like...
This is like sitting on its own decorative mount on the wall.
Does it look like a regular longsword or is it ornate?
Why don't you roll perception?
Happily. 12.
You don't know a lot about melee weapons.
True. I will go to that chest and I'll open it up.
As you do, the sword pulls itself from the wall magically and attacks you. Roll for initiative.
Oh, shit.
Damn it.
14. Sorry, guys.
So, Red, this sword pulls itself off of the wall and flies at you. What do you do?
I don't know. What do I do? I can't attack a sword.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, my God. I take out my bow and I fire. Ooh, 24.
You hit it. How much damage do you deal?
Is it humanoid?
No.
Seven? What? No. Seven damage?
Okay.
Seven damage.
Okay, the sword flies at you and strikes you with its long blade. 16 to hit?
It matches, yes. It hits.
8 slashing damage.
Oh my God, yeah.
Your turn.
Does it look like my first hit did anything against it?
Yes.
Like it hurt it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then I'll attack again. A natural one!
Yes!
No!
Oh my God, what is going Chester. On, Chester? Hubris is coming home to roost here.
Oh, no.
Additionally, shame. Are you using your bow?
Oh, fuck.
Because now it's in melee
it's
range
a
of you.
Disadvantage. Oh, my God, guys. I'm going to die by a magic sword.
14 misses you.
Yes, it does.
Your turn.
Oh, God. I dropped my bow, and I'm going to pull up my short sword, and I'm going to attack it with my short sword.
Okay. Sword against sword.
Swords against swords with a 13.
You miss. It tries to get you back. Clang, clang. A metal upstairs. That's a dirty 20. 5 points of slashing damage. Red, it hacks at your arm. Your turn.
Does Doran hear anything about this?
Yeah, you like hear the metal time? Meeting metal.
I begin to travel towards the clanging I hear upstairs.
Okay.
I jump on the bed and I strike the sword again. Huzzah, you'll not get the best of me, long sword. 9?
No.
Oh, no.
That's a 5, so the sword also misses you. Doran, you travel closer. Next round, you will be in the room. But for this round, Red, what happens now?
Ha! And like, I kind of picture, parry. Yeah, we're like parrying back and forth, like swashbuckling.
You're dueling with an invisible opponent.
As I'm like moving across the bed and like everything in the room is kind of getting fucked up and I'm like tearing through a tapestry. And I'm going to attack it again. With a 19.
You hit.
Now it is hurt.
It is.
So I'm doing Colossus Slayer damage.
Oh, yes, you are.
It's under its max hit points.
Yes, sir.
9 damage.
You hack off one of the pieces of the cross guard on the hilt, and it shivers.
And I intimidate it. Don't you try, ghostly weapon!
It sort of seems to lose its resolve as it quakes in the air. Doran, you burst through the doors, and you see Red fighting a sword.
Join me, Doran! It's good sport! I'm laughing at this point.
He's also bleeding.
What am I looking at here, Red?
An enemy! Help, friend! Pull out your axe!
And I do. And I retrieve my axe from behind me. And
do you want to make an attack?
Yeah.
Okay, do it.
Oh, natural 20.
How much damage?
9.
Roll that dice again.
14. 14 and 10.
You cleave it in half and both pieces fall from the air.
Well done. What and Red like jumps up bleeding, slaps you on the back. He's like, oh, that was good sport. He got me good. Look at this. And I show you my arm and there's like blood matting in my fur.
What the hell are you doing up here?
And now to loot its riches. And I walk over to the chest that I originally started with and I flip it open.
You find some treasure. A little treasure.
What do we find?
You find a velvet sack containing 180 silver pieces. A silk pouch containing 4 gemstones that you would value at 100 gold each. And you find a silver jewelry box containing 3 beautiful gold necklaces. You would probably guess that the jewelry box is worth about 25 gold, and each of the gold necklaces are worth 250 gold.
I take it all. And I'm like, this was a well-fought victory, Doran. And I start putting it in my sack and I say, and look, Lady Nandar is no longer with us. At the very least, we should return this jewelry box to Jack and he can send it back to Waterdeep with her body.
Red, that was the only reason I'm not telling you to put the stuff back.
because we are going to send it back with Jack to Waterdeep.
Of course.
So for expediency's sake, unless you want to set off any more traps, Red?
No.
Let's say that you go with Doran, you tell Jack. Yeah. The three of you go, you find Kraloth, mm-hmm. Everyone's all on the same page.
That's right.
Is there anything else you want to do before you leave town?
I don't think so. We looted.
I stop at the inn and I gave Morak another big long embrace and I said
your beards intertwine like Velcro. Yeah.
And I say until next time, good friend. And we shake hands and
he claps you on the back and Morak gives you a tube with a scroll in it to give to
the sun.
Yeah.
Miros. I think Jack leaves a letter with the Waterdeep guards who are heading back that way to deliver for him. And
all right, I think we're ready to go.
Let's do it.
Is there a bus or something?
as we're walking, he'll pull up an illusion of a map in front of us that sort of walks with us, and he'll sort of show where we started, where Waterdeep is, where the Ardeep Forest is, and then the path from here on to from Nightstone to Golden Fields.
Every time you do that, we're brought back. Like Doran and I to like magic because like you just have this map.
Yeah, so we go north around the Ardeep Forest and then we catch the road here and we're in Golden Fields.
That's easy.
It's not too bad. It's not the most well traveled road, but it's not alone, and it's actually really exciting. You know those salt and pepper shakers?
Yes,
made by Claire Saffitz. They're over 100 years old, and she's from Golden Fields.
No shit.
Yeah, it's really fabulous that we found them here. I'm sure we can find someone who would love to give them a...
Actually, speaking of that, I should admit this because Doran knows. I did find this, and I pull out a small silver box and open it and reveal three gold necklaces inside. Are they worth anything? They were inside the keep.
Are they over 100 years old?
No.
They look like fancy jewelry, yeah.
I won't lie. We did take it from the keep, but also, I mean, they're worth quite a bit of money. Perhaps we could use them to buy ourselves some armor and things once we're in town.
Lady Nandar is not around to need the money.
Jack doesn't have a problem with it, Doran. Jack doesn't have a problem.
I don't care then.
Then let us travel.
On this note, you know, I'll also mention that I did acquire cartographer's tools.
Oh, excellent.
Way with my last level up. Maybe that was just through...
Maybe you and Jack, he's teaching Jack. You some tools of the trade.
And so, you know, as you build this magical, you know, map, I'm sketching it and using a compass. And,
oh my God, I love the idea of like Doran
his
seeing Jack.
His ham-fisted version of Jack's map.
It's like a kid like following their dad and being like, I'm a businessman too because I'm carrying a suitcase
but
type thing, you know?
He's got all of this unique knowledge about like the mountain ranges and what they actually look like a level down. And so the two of you, as you're traveling, sort of sharing knowledge about geography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's almost like, oh, here's the shorthand I use to keep all the details in mind so when I go to make the actual paper map later, it can be accurate. Here, you know, so I like to note how long we walked and that sort of thing.
I'm keeping my notes here.
Was the set maybe an old set that Jack didn't need anymore?
Oh, I love that.
Sure, yeah.
It's got like a little JP engraved on it.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack.
Very nice. You're very welcome.
Here begins our first travel montage. We're going to be traveling for a couple days overland, and I'd love to know... just kind of snapshots of your first day and night. What happens when you set out? Who goes first? Red, are you scouting?
I definitely agree with Red sort of taking the lead naturally. It just seems very him. Despite all of the in-town and social, you know, aspect of his character, when he is in nature, he is very much a ranger. You could see it from a mile away. So yeah, I think he's in the front with his hood up and the cloak billowing behind him. But he is definitely sort of, you know, guiding through rock faces, you know. It's very Lord of the Rings when you see them cresting a hill type scene. And, I mean, for the most part, when they're traveling during the day, that's Red's position.
I see Jack and Doran stopping every now and then, pointing out landmarks. And then, you know, they'll stop and chat about it, pointing off in the distance. And then you'll see Doran, like, jotting and seeing what Jack jots. And then
and there's the odd time on one of those stops where Jack will actually embody Kieran and go fly up and get the bird's eye view of what's going on and sort of come back with a few more details or a few more, oh, it curves up this way, or you know, we better let Red know he might want to go check that out or something, just to be like, oh, it looks like maybe there's a meadow over there we could camp in that's not obvious, keeping all those details that might not otherwise be really readily available. And I think when he's not doing the cartography mapping of the area, Jack's spending a lot of time with Rilex, sort of just trying to study this winged cat, trying to understand what makes a Tressim work, how they are as a pet, like how they exist in nature.
Yeah, and I love the kind of the idea that Red, having sort of the beast side of him, is like very easy with it. You know, he'll walk by and it's like it loves him already because he can understand it. He can talk to it. And you're like studying this thing, like trying to understand it, putting that almost analytical mind, whereas Red, almost the same way he treats magic, where it's like just part of him, doesn't really appreciate that connection he has. He'll just walk by and the cat's like looking at him and he like talks to it for a second and you're like, how did you do that?
I love the image of Red scouting ahead and then Rilix being the second one to appear on the horizon, like poking her head up and like taking to the air above you.
Kraloth is not paying too much attention to what's going on around him. Since the ritual, this is the first ritual that he's done since he arrived in Faerun. And he's kind of going through the past rituals that he's done in his head, and he's thinking back to his squad, back when he first started exploring the mists and fighting the undead. He remembers the first ritual that he had to perform as the cleric of the group of when the first member of their group died. And then there was the second ritual for the second person of their party, then the third ritual, then the fourth one, and then the last one, he's doing it alone. And the whole world around him is kind of getting darker, and he's getting more and more depressed. His shoulders are starting to sag, and all of a sudden he hears a noise from up front, and he's startled out of it. And Red is at the very front of the group, and he's spotted something, and he's shouting, and he's jumping enthusiastically, and Kraloth doesn't know what it is, but there's just an ember of this remembering, oh yeah, that's not where I am anymore. Things are good.
As you're like fading back in, you know, I'm running up to Trickleweed. It's Trickleweed. There's Trickleweed over there. I didn't ever see it in Faerun. You gotta come see. Come.
Oh, Red, show me, Red, show me.
It's just like some mundane root that doesn't do anything. No, it doesn't taste like anything. You can't use it for anything, but isn't it pretty?
My goodness, you found this yourself.
Yes.
My God.
And then these situations are obviously intertwined by, you know, montages of us stopping and collecting firewood and setting up a camp for the night. I'm looking at my own stuff here, and I've got a dragon chess game set. So, you know, I pull that out, and maybe Kraloth and I played strategically.
Sure,
you know, battle movements.
I'm just like, why don't I just go straight for your king?
Well, if you try to do that, then what about this? And I move a piece and you realize, wow, you can really be blindsided easily, right?
Yeah. And Red's like, can I play again? And you guys are like, no, because I don't play right. I'm like skipping the pieces.
You're like trying to build a tower.
Yeah, I'm like inventing my own game and that doesn't make any sense. It just frustrates everybody. I'm like in the corner.
How many days are we traveling for?
You're going to be traveling for 4 days. Jack, what happens on the first night?
So, I mean, I think Jack's staying up late to sort of update his journal. He's sitting beside the fire. He said he'll take first watch. And really, that means he'll let Kieran watch around while he, reads books and writes in his journal.
Morning breaks. It's a beautiful day. Again, this is the month of Elaint, so it's autumnal. There are leaves falling all around you. It's a gorgeous morning. The first frosts are crusting long blades of grass. As you break down your camp for the day and prepare to set out on the road, you see something on the horizon.
What is that?
That's the sun, Darren.
No. Not that. That.
It's an enormous bank of clouds, and it draws close to where you are very swiftly.
Jack.
What?
What is that?
Have I ever seen or heard of clouds like these?
Yes, you did. In Nightstone.
Those are giant clouds. We need to find some shelter.
As this bank of clouds swiftly approaches your position, you see atop it, there is a tower. This is a huge tower, but not a castle like was described to you by the citizens of Nightstone. The tower must be hundreds of feet tall, and its spire looks strange. It's conical and painted blue and yellow. As the tower drifts closer to your position, stairs made of cloud stuff begin to descend toward you.
Interesting. This sends a different sort of message. What's going on? Are they trying to speak with us?
Doran is crouched on one knee with his battle axe in hand, still looking groggy from the night before.
Yeah, Kraloth is standing there with his shield out and his holy symbol in hand.
Yeah, I think from where Jack was hiding, he sort of launches Kieran off into the air and then closes his eyes and becomes the owl to sort of fly around and see what's happening at the top of these stairs before.
Can I ask, are they human-sized stairs or are they giant stairs?
they are human-sized?
Good question.
How far can you send Kieran in order to see through his eyes?
100 feet in his eyes, and if it gets to the range of that and it's not near the top of the stairs, I think I'll come back to my body and instruct Kieran to go sort of do a once-over and come back.
Kieran travels up into the air 100 feet and returns to you. You know that the tower is much higher than that.
So I'll send them all the way up and but, you know, I can't embody them to do that, just to go see what's going on.
Let's picture in our minds, as if we can all see through this owl's eyes, as Kieran flaps his wings and gains a sunny thermal in the morning. He travels up in these wide arcs, circling the stairs. He climbs for 1,000 feet until he sees this tower. The tower entrance is big enough that a giant could certainly enter. The tower is hexagonal, and there are two side tiers on it. The spire, I can only describe it as a wizard hat. It is blue, cocked jauntily to one side. There are stars and moons painted on it in gold.
So, like, Fantasia wizard hat.
Yeah, dude.
I think the minute those stairs revealed themselves to be sized for us, Red would begin moving to them. He wouldn't go all the way to the top. He'd take a few and then turn back and wait for the others. But, I mean, giants are like anything. You know, they can be, to Red's understanding, good or bad. And stairs shaped for us mean that they want us up. And I think he just says, come on, boys, it's time for adventure. Hey, they obviously want to talk. Let's give them our best.
It's certainly apparent that if they wanted to throw the first stone... they could have.
Oh, I just think that's a lot of stairs.
You look a bit worried, friend.
Yeah, because if we get up there's no telling how we're going to get down. I can think of at least two ways.
Oh, come, brother. It'll be fun. I promise you.
And I hold out my little paw to, like, take your hand.
Jack.
As Kieran gets back and reports what he saw...
It's a real big tower, boss!
So Jack sort of psychically grills Kieran for all the details that you'd just given us. And
full of stuff! Boss!
Well, let's go! There's no firing arrows at us. I'm excited. Come on!
Get ready for 1,000 feet of climbing stairs.
I love it that the tallest person in the party is afraid of heights.
Yeah. What do the stairs feel like walking on clouds?
They feel...
like really high price running shoes.
They feel as firm and as safe as solid ground.
Cool.
I think Red is really excited about this, honestly. Bounding. I think he's like bounding at this point. Yeah, of course, because... it's a fucking cloud road to a city in the... I mean, that's... how isn't that exciting? He is giddy.
It's huge.
Totally. And he really wants Kraloth excited. He's like, come on. And he like hangs back. He's like, come on. Aren't you excited for this? This is all like the dreams.
Just taking one step at a time, Red. Can only be so excited. Oh, wow. What are we about? 500 feet up now?
Higher than that. Look over the side. Here, look down there. Look at that tiny little tree.
You see the beautiful autumn colors stretching as far as you can see.
I guess they couldn't have put a cloud railing up here. Huh?
Oh, you're going to be fine, Kraloth. I've seen you face much scarier things than this, like dying 2 times.
You're right. Let's go.
You reach the top, finally, after maybe 10 minutes of climbing. And... you find yourself atop a cloud that feels solid underfoot. There is this tower, and ahead of you, an open archway leads to a huge open room.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, Red is just barreling forward. I think he, like, stops in the doorway and, like, waits for the others and, like, waves them in, like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like, come on, you're gonna miss it!
Can I do a perception check on the front of this place?
Of course.
15 plus 5, so 20.
The walls of this tower are pristine and white, whitewashed with some kind of magical substance. It shows no texture, no crack, no sign of its masonry. Mm. Beyond this open vestibule, there is a room that is 20 feet by 20 feet and 80 feet tall, inside of which Red looks like some stuffed animal. And beyond him, through this open vestibule door, there is a massive blue curtain made of some shiny fabric that flaps gently in the wind.
I think Red would like clear his throat and call out in giant, because Red speaks it too.
Oh, man.
Hello! Or,
hello!
It like changes the tone too.
How did you do that? That'd be like me speaking like you. Hello! Oh, hello! Oh, hello!
It's all in the vocal cords, friend.
So Red has entered the tower. Does anyone else approach?
Yeah, I think Jack's following behind him. He's a little bit wide-eyed and just trying to take it all in. It's a lot of new experiences for him, and he's trying to, you know, suss out all of the little details, not letting his eyes miss anything. It's sort of a combination of all of his interests of like weird arcane stuff and buildings that he's never seen before. And so there's a, like, he's studied giant ruins and stone giant ruins in other places, and so trying to like
bingo
put all these things together.
Yep.
Doran enters sort of in a dizzying way. And question, do clouds leave footprints behind Red? No?
No, they don't.
So yeah, I call it.
Mm-hmm. You hear no response.
And I turn to those. Obviously, they invited us here. They specifically came to where we were in the woods and rolled out the red carpet.
They did. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't be careful, though.
Well, fair enough. I think I'll carefully pull back the blue curtain.
Darren and Jack are nodding.
Darren.
Who's Darren?
Did I say Darren? Doran's, I'm saying Jack.
Doran's brother.
Let me restate.
Did I say Darren? I was thinking of Jack. What does that mean?
I was saying Doran and Jack, and I got Darren and Jock.
Darren and Jock.
It doesn't matter.
That's great.
I like Doran.
They're a less good adventuring party, yeah, for sure.
Our rivals.
Multiverse.
Rayloff's Darren. Hi, I'm Darren.
I'm Jock. I'm a wizard.
I'm Ked.
Doran and Jack just nod at each other in agreement with, you know, the observations made by Red and Kraloth.
I'll wait just so Kraloth isn't walking by himself, but if you and Red walk in first, we'll...
Yeah.
You open the curtain.
Like a horror movie, my hand slowly moves forward to the curtain and then I pull it back quickly.
But that's like pulling back a massive curtain. You're like the one center.
Yeah, I like pull.
Like a mouse on a shower curtain.
Yeah, exactly. It's like really difficult.
Hello.
Behind the curtain, you see a 100-foot-high room. It is hexagonal, and it contains some furniture that is sized for a giant. This is like fee-fi-fo-fum shit, where
cool.
You are, you know, not even as tall as a...
golden goose?
Yeah, not even as tall as a chair leg. You see a giant-sized table and a stone chair. You see that dangling from the ceiling by iron chains, there are crystal spheres larger than you are, and they are illuminating the room brightly as if containing flame. And as you look up at the room and around at everything that surrounds you, you see a massive pair of sandals attached to a massive pair of feet that are slowly descending through a hole in the ceiling.
I mean, how intimidating can a giant be who wears sandals, really?
True. He's not wearing socks, is he?
No, he's
okay,
not.
Okay, good.
He's like the dad of giants.
Hey, guys, what you doing here? You want some popcorn?
You like my Tilly hat?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As you watch these feet emerge from the ceiling attached to this billowy purple robe... This giant, who is fully like 30 feet tall, comes through this hole in the ceiling, touches down on the ground, and starts pouring himself a glass of water.
Floating down?
He
or
was.
Is he jumping down?
No, he's floating very slowly and purposefully.
Okay.
He has windswept white hair and a long, wispy white beard. His robe is adorned with golden stars. He has one large scar over his left eyebrow, and he's got some seriously sick earrings. He has a vacant look in his eyes, and he busies himself about the room. Doesn't seem to be paying you too much attention.
And I call out again.
He turns quickly, surprisingly quickly, and looks at you.
Hello!
Oh, I have company. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, one moment.
And he takes two large steps towards where you stand, crouches way down, and puts his hand on the ground.
And I climb on and like reach back for the others. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I take a nervous step towards the hand, but we'll like take Red's hand and climb onto the giant's hand.
Like he said, he's got company.
Not he's got food, so.
Right.
I'm thinking, sure.
He picks up Red and Jack in one hand and Kraloth and Doran in the other hand and turns around. You are whoosh through the air like 80 feet and he sets you down on the table kind of ungently but not intentionally rough. And he takes these massive strides and then pulls the chair up to the desk and sort of lays his chin down on the table so that he can look at you all in the eye. You stand about as tall as the height of his head. These huge eyes, bigger than your own heads, staring out at you, milky white. And you feel the exhalation of his breath as he speaks to you. Small folk.
The odd sensation of being picked up by massive hands is only surpassed by the even odder sensation of being whooshed through the air at unattainable speeds.
And yeah, it's all down. Very uncomfortable for Kraloth.
Mm-hmm.
And Red's beaming. He's like, well, hello to you too. Thank you so much for inviting us in. You have a lovely home.
Yes, it is quite.
I must say, I love the hat on the top of the building and your robe. They are both stellar.
Why, thank you. Oh, in common, stellar means as the stars.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's kind of a joke, because there are stars on my robe.
Very good. Well, either way, it is very, and I say the giant word for, like, wonderful. Like,
oh, your accent is quite good.
Thank you. It's not as good as my friend Jack's here.
Hello,
I'm Jack Page. What is your name?
My name is Zephyros. It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
And my name, of course, is Red, and
Kraloth. Kraloth. I'm a bit flustered from the height. I'm not used to being up so high, you'll understand.
He smiles widely at you, each of his teeth as big as dinner plates.
It must have been you that the deities have spoken of.
What do you mean?
The planar entities told me that I would come across the small folk that would shape the ordning. And here you are.
The Ordning.
Yes, the Ordning.
Can you give us a bit more of an explanation? What is this Ordning?
Of course.
And he leans back up and away from the desk and floats back up through the ceiling. He's just gone from the room. You hear the sound of an earthquake as things are moved around in the room above you. And you catch a glimpse of a book, a giant-sized book, hurtling through the air, just through the hole in the ceiling, and then he comes back down as his sandals land on the clouds again. He's got this massive book in his hands. He points at it.
The Ordning. It's a caste system that the giants use. Tells us from long ago who are those who are worthy and those who are unworthy. Do you understand?
So the rank, like, amongst all of the cloud giants, those who say float in giant castles are higher than those who float in wizard towers, or?
No, little orc. Giant society is defined by the Ordning. It is a system imposed upon the giants by Anam, the All-Father, praise be. Traditionally, hill giants are at the bottom of the Ordning, with Etin and ogres as being less than worth of mention. At the top of the Ordning, the storm giants stand all-powerful, and the other races of giants are arrayed between them, fire giants, cloud and stone, frost and the like. You might think of storm giants as his first kin. The hill giants, least respected are the youngest children and the weakest of us. The ordering, if you will, of giant kind.
If that's the ordering, If that's the ordering, why would we need to shape it? Is it out of whack?
Anam the All-Father has dissolved the ordering as of late. All of giant kind is experiencing an upheaval. I myself do not understand why, but I have been contacting the intraplanar deities and beings to understand what is happening. I have been told that the small folk play a large role. And here you are in my cloud.
Why have we been chosen?
Indeed, did the gods say? I was hoping you could tell me.
We're pretty awesome.
I can see that. Look at you. So small.
Well, perhaps that explains why some of your other cloud giants were throwing boulders at the city of Nightstand. Nightstone.
God, I love you.
Just left.
That's awesome.
I do apologize. Some of my kind are evil creatures and tend toward chaos and destruction. I myself love knowledge and travel. I'm headed to the Moonshae Isles.
They sound lovely.
They are. They are in the middle of the sea, and I have written a volume about them every year of my life.
Jack's looking like he's taking notes. He's looking at this guy like he's almost overwhelmed with the amount of like stuff he wants to ask and stuff he wants to write down and record. You said you contacted other planes and they talked about small folks. Who did you contact? Who was talking about us?
I was speaking with extraplanar entities.
Any specific ones?
Perhaps you saw Moradin up there.
I have seen Moradin.
Oh my God. What is Moradin really like?
Let me tell you, little dwarf. He's pretty cool. He likes to party a lot. And, he's got a sick hammer that he likes to flash around. He does tricks with it.
And Doran has this big grin that comes across his face.
He can drink me under the table for sure.
I knew it! Thank you. Thank you. You've given me so much excitement.
I think he would like you, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want to brag, but I'm fucking cool. I was warned against taking a direct hand in the events of your destinies, but I can take you where you need to go.
So let me get this straight. Your all-father...
Anam.
He disbanded the ordning. And these extraplanar entities want us to bring it back together. It sounds like you don't know why, but it kind of sounds like this ordering, this caste system. How do you feel about it?
Overall, it has created a sense of identity within giant kind. The ordering, although perhaps oppressive, has allowed us to know where we belong. Now that the ordering has been broken, perhaps it is true that those oppressed species of giants feel like they can make an attempt to seize power.
You don't feel that they should?
It is beyond me to know the way things should be. All I want is to understand the world, to research it, and honestly, I'm very pleased to meet you. Tell me about bread.
I have some bread right here if you'd like to inspect it.
He holds out an index finger. The bread becomes a speck on the tip of it.
What does one do?
We eat it.
He extends a tongue as large as a bedspread. and touches this loaf of bread to it where it dissolves in his saliva.
I like it.
So do we.
Okay. So to get this clear, then, what you're saying is that the storm giants down to the hill giants have always had a particular order. One day their god sends a message and say, gloves are off, new order, you guys choose, and now every giant is trying to be on top.
All giants sensed the ordnings breaking at the same time. This happened recently.
How recently, Zephyros?
About 3:10 day. Perhaps you have noticed its effects.
Yes, we have. We actually came from Nightstone, where the Cloud Giants had taken the Nightstone, probably to give them a leg up. The Nightstone must be powerful.
How certain are you that it's us, that your extraplanar entities have been talking about?
I'm convinced that you have been chosen to restore order in whatever way is necessary.
So we might not want to put the storm giants back on top. Maybe we want to put the hill giants on the top. Or some of these frost boys sound pretty cool.
I myself am rad.
You're pretty definitely rad. But no, rad. No giggle on the cool frost. I thought that was worth it.
I don't know common...
See, now you get it. Just need to explain. So I turn to the others and I say... So this makes sense. So I guess for some reason we are destined to shape who gets to be on top and who's going to be on bottom and ultimately shape the ordering. Sounds pretty cool.
How the hell are we supposed to get involved with shaping an entire ordering of giants?
You already are.
I suppose just being who we are?
There is destiny that lies ahead of each of you.
Well, then I wonder if we should continue to Goldenfield and...
Is that where you are headed?
It was.
Well, then I shall make haste and deliver you there.
I suppose that not every giant is going to recognize us as those who will shape the ordering. Is that not fair?
No. Many of them will recognize you as dinner.
Now that you know our true purpose, do you have anything that could help us? Maybe items or even friends that you may have made along the way that could aid us in our quest?
The only items I have with me in the tower I use on a daily basis and would miss greatly.
Zephyros, you know, if you wanted to share your spellbook with a fellow wizard, perhaps there was something we could teach each other. I'm not.
Roll persuasion.
Oh my god. 4.
Unfortunately, little human, there's not much you could teach me.
I definitely don't think that's true, but perhaps you've got other things in your mind.
Have you been to the Moonshay Isles?
I've heard a lot about them. They're definitely on the list of places to want to travel. I'm very familiar with paternal father wizard figures dismissing me, so that's okay.
Oh, it must be tempting for you. Here you have the people, the little folks who are deigned to be... redesigning the ordering, and you yourself are a cloud giant, and yet you do not wish to interfere with it. That is commendable that you don't want to step in and put in a word for the cloud giants to be on the top.
I care not for my place in the ordering.
Cool. I like that. You're cool. Can I have one of your beard hairs?
All right.
Thank you. And I walk up and I take out my dagger and I cut a long strand of white hair and I wrap it up and yeah. Take it.
You're weird. I like you.
I like you, too. Well, I suppose, then, maybe if you can continue bringing us to Coldenfield.
I'll show Zephyros a map with a minor illusion just to say, here's where I think we are, here's where we're headed. Could you drop us off here?
Ho, ho, ho. Little orc. One moment.
I think he probably puts you guys all in the front pocket of his robe. It smells kind of musty.
He's got like, I picture he's Mothball. Got like a kangaroo pouch.
Yeah,
kind of like the dude. <He's>
Get like in the pouch, man.
Big Lebowski of Cloud Giant.
Hey, come on up to my pad.
His wizard's cloak is like a fashioned hoodie with like the hoodie pockets.
Yeah, so sick.
Smells like smells like weed in here.
There's a howling wolf on the front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he takes you up to the second floor, and you see that there is a third floor that extends beyond the second floor, but he puts the four of you in his pouch, and you levitate through the hole in the floor, and you see this 80-foot-tall room There is a set of windows on either side of this huge room, panes of stained glass. There's a giant-sized bed and a huge wooden chest. Stone shelves protrude from the walls at heights of 20 feet, 40 feet, and 60 feet, atop which there's more than 500 books. And on the right side of the room, there is an orb that Zephyro stands near, and he says, "This is how I control my tower. It is a navigation orb." And so, Jack, I appreciate your map, but I know where Golden Fields is well. And he puts his hand over the orb, and you feel the tower start to move.
Zephyrus, could you do me a favor?
As Doran suddenly has this like childlike urge looking at Red.
Can you drop me onto your bed? It looks very soft.
What?
I just want to like
I love it.
Tumble from above.
No, and Red's like, and me too, please.
Be careful now. And he just tosses you into the bed.
And we go flying hundreds and hundreds of feet through the air.
And you take 86 fall damage.
It's a cloud bed.
Zephyros, that was fun. You believe that we are here to shape the Ordning, obviously. I was wondering if you have anything, some sort of trinket that we might be able to show other giants to prove that we're here. Something that we can say, yes, we are here to help. Is there anything that would be specific? Maybe a piece of fabric? I don't know. You know what I mean? Something to prove?
I hold very little standing among my kind, unfortunately. Now, Jack, let me show you the countryside
yes,
from
please.
Here. And he descends, he brings all four of you back through the hole, back to the ground floor, and he takes you, Jack, on his palm, and he walks out onto this solid cloud stuff that is his back lawn, and he's pointing out this bird's eye view for you, which you've seen before. Kieran, I don't know if he's usually flying 1,000 feet above the
definitely,
ground.
Yeah, I've only seen it from 100 feet, and yes. So the 1,000-foot view is something else. And
so the two of you share a few minutes together as he points out different landmarks from this distance. And you're slowly just coasting across the sky. Yeah.
And Jack's taking as many notes as he can. He's trying to memorize the whole scene, find the landmarks he does note, and figure out the pieces that he doesn't to sort of sketch out the whole piece of the sky from 1,000 feet.
Did you build this? Is this all yours?
Yes, I'm very proud.
Zephyros, can we have a piece of a cloud?
What do you mean?
Well, just a piece of your land here, something that we could take with us. Yeah. Nice memory.
Funny little people. That sounds fine.
Thank you. And we'll put it in the vial, that Kraloth that you had from the holy water eons ago.
Perfect. Sounds good.
I think he gets you guys all ready for bed. He tucks you in. He puts a cushion down on the ground.
And let's not forget that I've got Relics, the Trezum.
Yes, you
with
do.
Us. Oh. Who curls up the at cat. The feet.
Yeah, I feel like Zephyros is really enamored by this little creature.
What is this?
Oh, it's a Trezum. We're returning it to Golden Fields.
One moment. And he flies up through the hole in his floor and comes back with a book. And he, very reminiscent of Jack, sets it down on the table and starts scribbling notes in giant runes about this cat. Trezum.
Cute.
So you go to bed. You sleep here on the cloud with Zephyros. He puts down this huge pillow that the four of you all cuddle up on. He throws a tea towel over you, which serves as a quilt, and you are buffeted gently to sleep by the winds high above Faerun. You spend the next day marveling at the ease of traveling by cloudbank, watching the ground pass steadily below you. Zephyros is a kind but distracted host, spending hours writing by himself on the second floor of his wizard tower, having seemingly forgotten your presence. Occasionally, you'll see a large creature, half lion and half eagle, take flight from the top floor of the tower, returning with some limp beast hanging from its talons. As the sun begins to set on the 30th day of Eliant, the four of you are sitting outside on the cloud lawn while Zephyros naps upstairs when you spot some winged creatures heading right for you. As they grow closer, you can make out they are darkly armored riders atop massive vultures. There are 9 of them, and they wheel around you, closing in to land.
I can't imagine that's a good sign. But have a happy holiday from everyone here in Faerun, and remember to give us a good review if you're enjoying. See you next year!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.